Welcome to Fire is Orange, a short story compilation by number one New York Times bestselling author, Scott Segler!
Ten titillating tales to tantalize your thoughts.
Hello, junkies. I am back from a little mini trip for my birthday. It was supposed to be a pure vacation, but since I am still working on the final draft of Mount Fitzroy, the sequel to Earthcore, I worked through most of the vacation. I don't mind. As long as you get your stories, doll, I don't mind at all. Such is life. Today's story is a throwback to the heyday of podcast fiction. It was many years ago, where myself, J.C. Hutchins, T. Morris, Mark Jeffrey, Mer Lafferty, and others were the pioneers of putting forth free podcast novels. And Mer is one of the earliest podcasters. Her name is Mer Lafferty. I think some of her stories may still be available as free podcast, but she created a bit of a shared universe and let everybody else play in it. You'll hear all about that in the author's notes, which this week come before the story, not after. I just can't seem to make up my mind. You know what I mean? This story is a superhero story. Superhero movies and TV shows are all the rage. So how does General L. Fontaine Siglerissimo treat the traditional superhero story? With some off-color humor, with some social commentary, and with a hapless hero who has put himself in quite a pickle. So first the author's notes, then the story. Here we go with Pink Torpedo. Author's note about Pink Torpedo. Normally, I put the author's note at the end of the story. For this one, however, it needs a bit of an intro if it's going to make any sense. This story was written in 2008. It is set in the universe of Mer Lafferty's novel Playing for Keeps. Lafferty, an award-winning author and podcaster, created a world of first-wave superheroes. Those of super strength, flight, telepathy, all the things we love from the comics. But also those of the third wave. Third wavers are stuck with the leftovers. The ability to make someone sober. The power to smell the past. The grace to carry a tray and never drop its contents. The power to produce high-powered excrement blasts. Absolute control over elevators. Powers that might not be best suited to defeating evil. Seventh City is home to these heroes, villains, and outcasts. The Academy takes in the first wavers who have the power to be somebody. The operation is run by Pallas, the city's most powerful hero. The Academy has rules against costume vigilantes, those not from the Academy, that is, taking on any super-powered baddies. But as we all know, where there are rules, there are loopholes. In 2008, Lafferty invited several authors to write a character that existed in the world of the third wave. Playing for Keeps is a quirky, irreverent look at the outcasts of the super-powered world. The people who can do that one thing, that mostly useless thing, that sets them apart. I asked for, and received astonishingly, permission to write a story called Pink Torpedo. I grew up on superhero comics. Spider-Man and the Badger were my favorites. Maybe someday, the Torpedo will join those erstwhile ranks. As long as he can pay his mortgage, that is. Enjoy. Pink Torpedo.
You gotta lose the swoosh, Mikey, Polly said. We lost the sponsorship.
I held the phone in one hand. The other hand rubbed my left temple so hard it was only a hair from punching through and stirring up my brain. I could do that, you know. The torpedo can kill you by punching you through the temple. Or my temple. Whatever.
But, Polly, that's a huge monthly check, I said. That's gonna hurt cash flow.
I got news for you, Polly said. It's not just Nike. Arm & Hammer pulled out. So did Sprite and Castrol.
Arm & Hammer? That was the ad space on both butt cheeks. They'd been a sponsor for years. Sprite bought the whole left arm, green with a swirling yellow stripe. Castrol paid big bucks for their logo on each muscly thigh. This was bad. Real bad.
Christ, Polly, who do we have left?
Dr. Scholes is still in, he said. Wrigley's, Tic Tacs, Mr. Goodbar, and Roach Motel are standing by you.
Great. Just great. Dr. Scholl's had each shin. They couldn't have the shoe because of Nike, while Wrigley's, Tic Tacs, and Mr. Goodbar were all small right thigh logos.
What about Palmolive?
Out, Polly said. In fact, they said, if you're ever seen again with their bottle logo on your left thigh, they will... Wait, I have it right here. Oh, yes. They will sue you into the Stone Age. Nobody wants to be associated with statutory rape, kid. Sorry.
I was ruined. All because of one 15-year-old little bitch with a third-wave talent to look like something that was definitely not 15.
Polly, listen. My variable-rate mortgage on the underwater lair, these interest rates are killing me. If I don't land a sponsor, well, the bank's going to foreclose.
Foreclose on the Torpedo Bay?
Kid, that's awful.
It was awful. It wasn't just an underwater lair. It was my home. My dining room table was the shell from Kobashoho the Mutant Turtle. That thing was 20 feet across. You couldn't fit that in a one-bedroom apartment.
What about the Torpedo Training Center?
When you can bench press 2,000 pounds, you can't exactly get a good workout at the local Gold's Gym, you know. A brother's gotta train. And Jellyfish. You know damn well he was coming for a rematch. Had to train for that.
What about my CD collection?
I'm just not an iPod guy. And for crying out loud, where was I gonna put my Star Wars action figures?
Polly, what am I gonna do?
Well, kid, the way I see it, you got three options. First, you can ask the WABID for a raise.
The WABID, Waterfront Association Business Improvement District. My day job employers. That wasn't going to happen. I was making $15 an hour, just a bit over minimum. Even doubling my wage would make me $30 an hour, about $470 an hour shy of covering my bills. The WABID was just a shill anyway. As a private security guard, I had the right to defend my employer's property. A lot of shit went down on the Seventh City docks. I was in the thick of it every time. That put me in super fights, and Palace and her academy bitches couldn't say a fucking thing. She hated that, which meant I loved it. The number of fights against hijackers, smugglers, saboteurs, and the seemingly endless parade of clowns that wanted to set up their own underwater lair in my harbor meant I scored plenty of TV news time. When you're on TV as much as me, major brands will pay for a little advertising space. That got me my second Academy loophole. I wasn't wearing a costume. I was wearing a billboard and a security guard uniform. Blow it out your ass, Palace.
The WABID doesn't have the money, I said.
Then there's your second option, Polly said. Throw in the towel, join up with Palace and her goobermen.
You mean ubermen?
Sure, why not?
I am not joining up with those goose-stepping morons. I'd put a foot through White Lightning's throat, I tell you. Do you know they'd make me cover up my neck tats?
You've told me that before, Polly said. Maybe once or twice.
I had these bitchin' marlins tattooed on my neck. Fins on my shoulder, tails down my back, their pointy nose rising up to the back of each ear.
How can the Academy be the second option, Polly? Makes me cringe to think how bad the third choice is.
Polly didn't say anything. Polly always had something to say.
Let me hear it, Polly.
Okay, kid. I have a solution to your problems.
Does it involve a donkey again?
No. How many times do I have to apologize for that?
About 7 million would do it.
Never mind, I said. What's the third option?
We have an offer from a new sponsor, big enough to make up for all the losses, including Nike.
That was a big sponsor. Coke? Pepsi? Buick? I could stand to take a bit of that Tiger Woods money, that's for damn sure.
I'm not seeing the problem, I said. I make my living off sponsors.
That's because I haven't told you the sponsor. They want a meeting first thing tomorrow.
Then, Polly told me the name of the sponsor. Yeah, that was going to be a problem. I fucking hate PowerPoint. Seriously.
And even though the late 20-something piece of ass rocking the slide deck looked like she could suck-start a Harley if you lubed her up with a little tequila first, I still fucking hated PowerPoint. I wasn't going to hit on her, no matter what. I'd had enough of letting Little Torpedo tell the Big Torpedo what to do. Her name was Clarice Pisarasa, and I was not going to bang her. Polly and I were there for the pitch. I didn't want to be there, but my choices were limited. The 20-something's manicured red thumbnail clicked her remote. This slide looks at the torpedo's popularity amongst the 13 to 23-year-old demographic, the hot piece of ass said. As you can see, Mr. Torpedo recently passed Tom Cruise and is rapidly gaining on Brad Pitt as a major sex symbol. Not just in Seven City, mind you. We're talking the entire state.
So I'm a sex symbol, I said. You don't exactly have a sexy product.
That is where you are wrong, Mr. Torpedo.
Tom, I said, before I could even stop myself. It was my opening flirty line, and it just came out automatically. Call me Tom.
Our product isn't sexy, Tom, but it is about sex. It's about coming of age, being responsible and fitting in because you can have sex. Look, I could show you slides all day long, but let's cut to the chase.
Let's, I said. I was giving her the look. I stopped myself from doing that because I was not going to bang this chick. Strict vow of celibacy from here on out, damn it.
When you're on the news, girls watch you, Clarice said. When your face is on the cover of a magazine, girls buy that magazine. When the tabloids say you're giving Scarlett Johansson the goods, the real Scarlett, that is, their point of purchase sales go up 17%. Girls watch you, and that's why we want our logo on your body.
The way she said, your body. Why didn't she just yank off her panties and do a triple Lutz with a flying dismount?
She smiled. We also know that you've lost a few sponsors.
Ah, fuck, here it comes. Time to get my balls crushed by Miss Wharton School of Business and Boobs.
We're doing fine, Polly said. No, you're not, Clarice said. Our competitive intelligence division is really sharp. We know quite a bit. Those variable interest rates are a bear, aren't they?
A bear. Or a bitch. Like this chick.
So, here's the deal. We've made a really generous offer. Extremely generous, considering that we know your situation. The offer stands, but only for the next...
She made a show of looking at her watch.
20 seconds. Then we walk. Now, if you think you can find more sponsors with a statutory rape case hanging around your neck like an underage albatross, be our guest.
That charge is crap.
Clarice smiled again. Are you going to tell me she looked 18?
She looked 24, I said. I know she looked 24 because she looked like Scarlett Johansson. Exactly like Scarlett Johansson. That little girl is a shapeshifter. How was I supposed to know it wasn't the real Scarlett?
Clarice shrugged. I have no idea how, and apparently neither do the sponsors that are bailing out on you. You have 15 more seconds.
It was ridiculous. I couldn't believe things had gotten so bad. I friggin' loved my underwater lair.
Three levels. Dry dock. Visiting dolphins adored the dry dock. The foosball table on level 10 seconds.
I ground my teeth. I had a stress headache. TMJ pain ratcheting out of control. Yeah, superheroes get headaches just like everyone else, okay? You have a deal, I said. I stood up and walked out. Polly would handle the rest of it. And that is how the Massengill disposable douche became my biggest sponsor. Polly and I were back in the torpedo bay. I meant to enjoy it for the next 3 weeks until the bank came to foreclose. 3 weeks, and then I was homeless. Looking at the costume that the Massengill people had sent, maybe being homeless wasn't such a bad thing after all.
I am not wearing this.
You have to, Polly said. It's in the contract.
But Polly, it's so pink. Polly looked at the costume I held in my hands like he was suddenly surprised.
Why, you're right, Torp. It is pink. It's also 6 months' worth of payments on your lair. Put it on.
I put it on. The Massengill people had put the logos of my other sponsors in the right places.
They'd removed Palmolive's logo. And, of course, my beloved swoosh was gone, replaced by the word Massengill. No freaking way. Time to throw in the towel. Man, it would suck so bad to see the look on Palace's face when she found out she had won. To make a living, I would have to join up with those Academy douchebags. Note to self, find a new favorite insult.
Forget it, Polly. It's not worth it.
That was that. I'd lost. The torpedo had to go legit. And that is when the torpedo alarm went off. I didn't move. Polly nudged me.
Hey, kid, you gonna get that?
I shook my head. The torpedo alarm was once known as the Wabbit alarm. It was the waterfront's way of calling for help in a superpowered situation. I, of course, had renamed it the torpedo alarm and wired it into the dispatch desk of every newspaper photo room, video blogger, and TV news crew in Seven City. That meant more coverage for me, and more exposure for my sponsors, and more sponsors fighting for that all-powerful chess logo space. What it meant now, however, was that if I responded to the alarm, every newspaper photographer, video blogger, and TV news crew would see me in my new suit. Polly turned on a security monitor. We both looked at the screen. Damn, not now.
Kid, Polly said, that is Jellyfish, and he looks pissed.
I didn't need Polly to tell me that. The pair of severed legs held in one tentacle, the blood-gushing torso held in the other, told me that Jellyfish wasn't in the mood to play. At least one dead already. I knew that douchebag, that asshole, he was just getting warmed up. More would die, and soon.
Kid, Polly said, I know.
I had no choice. I had to go out immediately before someone else got hurt. I didn't even have time to change. Motherfucker. I ran to the torpedo tube, shut the door, and hit the launch button. The torpedo tube is just flat-out badass. It lets me make an entrance, you know what I'm saying? The tube launched me out of the water at over 100 miles an hour. I broke through the surface like a Polaris missile, a comet trail of water behind me, the spray turning the afternoon sun into a rainbow as I arced over the waterfront. Like I said, an entrance. The tube automatically pointed me toward the danger. I shot through the air, headed toward Pier 42. Jellyfish was there, reaching for another hapless dock worker. God damn, but Jellyfish was an ugly son of a bitch. He had four slimy tentacles in place of each arm. Same with the legs. He had another tentacle that I think at one point might have been his John Thomas, but that's what you get for drinking stolen experimental serums. And that face. Oi! A face only a mother could love. If your mother was a cephalopod. I angled down and fired up the magnetics, picking up speed. My body has this weird power to magnetize and manipulate the magnetic fields around me. Basically, I shoot through the air like a slug through a railgun. I would have called myself Magneto, but that was already taken. What a dick that guy was. You serve a few years in a concentration camp, and you act like the world owes you a permanent fucking favor. I put both fists forward in the classic torpedo pose, turned on the afterburners, and hit Jellyfish right in the chest. Slimy shit splattered everywhere, as usual. Of all the arch foes in the world, mine had to secrete more mucus than a Jewish retirement home. The double punch knocked the dock worker free and drove Jellyfish right through the pier. Thick wooden beams splintered as he shot through, cracking one of those massive tarred pylons on the way down. I grabbed the dock worker. He was scared shitless. Well, pissless, actually, as he'd wet himself. Not that anyone would make fun of him. Jellyfish had just torn a man in half. I tossed the dock worker toward the shore, making sure the throw was short so he'd land in about 10 feet of water. All these dock guys could swim like nobody's business, so as long as I got him clear of the pier, he'd be fine. No sooner had I launched the man than I heard the rush of water behind me, felt the spray. I didn't need to see it to know what it was.
Jellyfish leaping out of the water, long tentacles waving, scattering water as he landed back on the broken pier. He can make an entrance, too. I'll give him that. I half-turned, giving my best glaring profile. You know, where I tip my head back, look out just past my brow, give that half-smirk. The ladies love that look.
Give it up, Jellyfish. Your rampage stops now, or my name isn't the Torpedo.
I heard helicopters up above, the news variety. They were getting this on camera. Then I heard something else, something horrible. A wet, gurgling sound, the likes of which had never soiled my ears before. It sounded like someone was boiling snot. I noticed the jellyfish was shaking, well, kind of like jelly. He was laughing. Laughing at me.
This is a gag, right? You're not going to fight me wearing that costume, right?
The cameras were rolling. I had no choice but to play it up.
Don't worry about my uniform, jellyfish.
I pointed at him, using my best pointing hero point.
You've got two choices. You can either sit down, or I can put you down.
It wasn't a bad tagline, but it wasn't great either. Polly and I had been working on a new one since forever. So far, nothing really sang like, "It's clobberin' time," or "By Odin's beard." Some guys just have a way with words.
Seriously,
Jellyfish said.
You can't possibly be for real. Good God, man, you're...
That laughter again.
You're the Pink Torpedo!
The sound of news helicopters had never seemed so loud. There were three of them up there. Great. They had those new mouse ear mics, too, the ones that could pick up conversation on the ground. Jellyfish shook his nasty excuse for a head, flinging mucus all over the shattered dock.
Oh, man, I know I'm ugly, but come on, the Pink Torpedo?
My costume was pink. My face was bright red. Was this worth saving a man's life? No, not really. He started laughing again. I was going to kill him. I ran at him. He fell back through the hole in the pier, shaking like jelly all the way. He hit the water. And he was gone. He could swim faster than me, and we both knew it. Jellyfish was heading back out to sea. I'd won the fight, not because I'd been stronger, faster, or smarter, but because my opponent was laughing too hard to face me. Could it get any worse? I turned toward shore. Why, yes. Yes, it could get even worse. Running down the pier were two news crews, one photographer, and a blogger with a high-def handheld camera. All of them were catching me in full-color glory. My sponsor would be so thrilled. Humiliation was a small price to pay for keeping my home. At least, that's what I'd tell myself the next time dolphins came to visit.
That was Pink Torpedo. Next week, we kick off a 5-part story. It is The Hippo from Jonathan Mayberry's V-War series, which launched this week on Netflix. As by the time this episode drops, the entire series of V-Wars, I believe, is available on Netflix. That's right. You can go watch the show right now in the universe in which The Hippo, next week's story, is based in. Now, the character The Hippo, which is my character written for Jonathan's universe, is not in season one. Let's be honest, probably won't be in season two, because as violent as that show is, they don't want any of The Hippo. It's too violent, even for a show called V-Wars, and the V stands for vampire. It's true. But you'll be able to listen to the part one of the 5-part series coming up next week, because that is it for this week. We will be back with part one of The Hippo in just a few days. And until then, I will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to Fire is Orange, a short story compilation by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Narrated by Scott Sigler, Ray Porter, and A. Kovacs. Produced by A. Kovacs. Engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Copyright 2019, Empty Set Entertainment. All rights reserved. For more information about the author, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music by the band Amps and Volts.